Welcome to Security Architecture Podcast, where we help cybersecurity professionals to stay ahead of the curve and ensure they are successful in their cybersecurity journey.
Hi, I'm Evgeny.
I'm Dimitri.
We have here Chase to help us open season two about remote access. Chase, can you please introduce yourself and what do you do day by day?
Yeah, sure. So hi, my name is Chase Cunningham. I'm a principal analyst and vice president at Forrester Research. Primarily, I cover zero trust as a strategic concept. Retired military, worked for the government for a long time and then been over here for, gosh, going on 5 years now.
So we want to start to talk about evolution about ZTNA. Maybe can you speak for 2-3 minutes about remote access 20 years ago and where we are right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, 20 years ago, remote access was basically kind of a foreign concept to people where the majority of users didn't even know that that was a thing. I mean, for them, it was more like do a VPN, which some security person pushed out to them and made them, you know, enter some creds. And then they, you know, piped into a network and did their work. And if they didn't have that turned on, they didn't get to do anything. You know, it's very sort of laborious, antiquated process. Where we are now is this SDP, SDN sort of approach to the space where the user's never necessarily off of the corporate infrastructure, thanks to being, you know, the controls being pushed out through the fabric of the internet.
Also, 20 years ago, we all had workstations and we kind of spend more time at work. Now we spend a lot of time at home, so it's a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be you had, a workstation with a big, you know, 30-pound monitor at your desk, and you would, you know, be at work, and that was kind of the way that you got to the network was by physically sitting down and, you know, logging in. Now, because of COVID and because of a whole bunch of things, it's all remote, all mobile, all the time.
How did the ZTNA actually become the second word for remote access? That's interesting, right? Because the ZTNA concept is all about not allowing any network connectivity for something, you know, that's not supposed to be there, blocking everything and locking all your ports. But now it's just, you know, when someone says ZTNA, they mean remote access.
Right. And that's where things have kind of evolved to. You know, I tell people all the time in workshops and whatnot that if COVID had hit in 2018, we would have had cataclysmic sort of, you know, world ending type of issues with infrastructure because we weren't ready for it. Now, with the way things kind of are, it hasn't been easy, but it's been something that folks could adapt to. And that's because of the different sort of innovations that we've got going on in this space. The ZT side of this, really what it boils down to when you think about access, is essentially saying that there's a policy engine somewhere between me and where I want to go. And that policy engine is making decisions based on a whole bunch of telemetry to say, this is Chase, this is where he's supposed to go, this is what he needs to do, everything looks normal, I'll allow this connection to occur. You know, whereas the old model, like you guys were saying, was, you know, username, password, good to go.
What do you think are main requirements for remote access right now?
I mean, I think the main thing that we really see going on here is that the ease of use of this whole thing is becoming a standard part of the process. You know, I actually liken the current state of sort of security infrastructure to like the automobile. If you think about automobiles, even say 15, 20 years ago, you used to get airbags as an option. You used to have to, like, you know, turn on those types of things and whatever else. Now, because of the fact that it's a safety deal and because everyone everywhere needs it, it's just on. You get in your car, turn the key and go. You don't sit there and think about, well, did I get an option for an airbag or did I turn this thing on or whatever? That's where we're going with this technology is that it is, I'm doing my work, the internet and the configuration, the policy is taking care of all these other things that I shouldn't have to worry about. And it's basically just brokering those connections in real time.
So it's definitely nice to just connect, you know, and not think about it.
I mean, things are hard enough right now, right? No one needs more problems.
And it's becoming status quo.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing that's probably been bolted into this more recently that I think is really interesting in this space is the ability to check the device for health before they allow the connection. You know, if you look at some of the vendors in this space, they've built into the policy engine a way to check the device, see if it's got the patches it should have. And if it doesn't, it will say, you can't connect until you deploy this patch, which I think is great because that's a real, you know, you can take away usernames and passwords and VPN, but there's also the big issue of if you're going to let me be BYOD and use my own device, it needs to be patched before you connect to that network.
That's the security posture of the device that we're connecting from.
Right. What does it have on it? Is it up to date? Is the operating system, you know, Windows XP, those types of things?
In your opinion, what is the biggest motivator to move to ZTNA?
Well, I mean, the motivation comes down to a couple of factors. Number one, I think, is employee and user experience. You know, we've got to kind of approach this problem of our users that aren't security people shouldn't have to be security people to do their job. You know, people have said in response to studies, they like security better when it's kind of made magic. They don't want to do security. They just want to be part of that. So I think that that's one. The other is you're going to move to the cloud anyway for a whole bunch of different reasons, including lower cost, more use, you know, spread, da, 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 da. So why not go ahead and embrace this approach, which in a sort of pseudo greenfield environment makes things easier for you to do more, better, faster. I mean, this is kind of like if you don't approach the problem from the perspective of where you're going, like you can do this the old way, but it is basically the opposite of what you're trying to get to in the future state.
Do you think customers can fully move to ZTNA, or what will prevent them?
I think it's an evolution, right? I think it's a process. I think a lot of times where you see people go wrong is they just kind of say, you know, turn ZTNA on, and they don't really think about, well, let's do this sort of in a formulaic, strategic sort of side of it. Let's go through, you know, checkpoints and make sure that we have things right. You know, a great example is I worked with a big bank that was moving towards ZTNA, and during our scoping, they were like, we're going to do this for 5,000 users. And I was like, that is way too big. By the end of the day, the agreement was, we're going to do this for 50. And it's like, if you can do this right for 50, then we can replicate that at 100. And if we do it right for 100, we can go to 250. But that idea of like 5,000, which, I mean, for them, they had a huge infrastructure, so that was a small point. But still, that was way, way, way too big.
What do you think will happen in 5 years when we all use more cloud in general, SaaS?
I mean, I think where we're going is that this is, you know, there was a great article from the COO at Cloudflare that kind of said that we're going to get to a space where security's, she said, I think, not going to exist, which I think what she really means is that this is going to be part of the fabric of the internet, and that will be part of the way that these connections are made to work. You know, you're going to get to a space where you'll have one password combined with biometrics that will do all the things that you need to do. You're not going to have to do VPN configuration. You're just going to pretty much use your machine. You're going to log in, and the policy engine and the infrastructure is going to take care of all that other stuff. And we're working our way towards it right now.
So do you think we're coming back to the place where we do more security on the endpoint in the future?
Well, I think we should be. I mean, I think what you see, if you look at the sort of trend of the vendors in the space, for a while, they were like all core infrastructure, right? And taking care of data center, which they've kind of done. Now we're back to mobile endpoint BYOD. We need to be able to push more controls and more seamless capabilities to the endpoint. And there's also a nuance there too, where it's my machine. Like this machine I'm on right now is my personal machine. For the purposes of my company, I'll let you put an agent on it, but you still should be cautious about the way that you sort of do things on my box.
Interesting. Why is that?
Well, because it's one thing to say for the purposes of a corporate policy and to protect my company network, like I'm going to block you from access if, you know, these things occur. But it's a different thing to say, if I see something weird going on your machine, I'm going to reach out and, you know, stop you from being able to log in. Because, I mean, it's my machine, right? So there is a kind of line in the sand between corporate responsibility and protection and personal space, where it's not necessarily an easy thing to do all the time. But a lot of the things we're seeing in the space are making it more achievable.
You know, it reminds me of some case that I was made aware of. Early days of mobile device management platform, I remember that there was some employee at some company, his phone was connected to such system, and then when he left the company, his phone was disconnected from that system, and what happened is that all his personal photos were erased.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, too, because of this whole COVID thing, is you have a lot of homes where you might have one machine for a family, not for each individual person. So you've got to be cautious too. Like, if my children are doing things on my machine, you know, is it malevolent, or is it just my kid clicking something they shouldn't? And how do you respond to that? So that's where the sort of UEBA side of this is getting better all the time.
Right.
So you mentioned UEBA. I'm wondering, by definition, UEBA is not supposed to be part of remote access, but it's more and more becoming because you want to track what you're doing. So by you talking to other vendors, what kind of interesting features, new features that were not part of remote access that have become part and kind of intriguing?
Yeah, I mean, what I've seen that showed up most often now in this space is that UEBA stuff is really the, you know, the oldest kind of insider threat things are now UEBA. And it really is just giving you better telemetry so that you can put that into the policy engine and have a way to make more accurate real-time decisions. You know, it's not too hard when you look at the volume of data and the availability of information to say, this looks weird and it's not normal, so I should do something. And I mean, that could be, you know, my kid jumping on my machine, you know, during working hours. I don't go look at, you know, Roblox, but if all of a sudden they see Roblox on my machine, you know, that's probably a child. So we should, you know, be a little bit more cautious about the things that we allow to occur.
I actually have a question around, you know, DLP. For example, right? That's also one of the functionalities that coming into the space of ZDNA and remote access. Now, having people at home, it's very important to deploy some type of DLP prevention to prevent information leaks from the companies. However, on the other hand, right? I mean, you have your phone in your hand and you always can take a picture of the screen.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the one-off sort of things that you can't ever, I mean, it doesn't matter how solid your suit of armor is, somebody will find a way to get around it. So I think, yeah, to your point, like it's, that's also where I think that there's a lot of value in being careful about the people that you actually hire into your organization. You know, there is a reason for things like background checks and kind of looking at, you know, what, because, you know, people tend to follow trends. If you've done malicious things in the past, you might do malicious things in the future. Is that a risk you're willing to take?
Right. So you're saying like these, that kind of things need to be handled at the HR level.
Yeah, that's an HR issue, I think, because you can't, doesn't matter how good my system is, somebody will find a way to do something. And like you say, they just take a picture of it.
Jay, so when people move to ZDNA remote access in the cloud, they probably need to calculate if it's actually worth it for them to do. In your conversations with customers, with vendors, what does it put in account? What is the thinking about it? How is it actually doing this?
Well, I think really what you see is a lot of return on investment on being able to get rid of things that were usually double and triple dipping. If you kind of look at the IAM, ZTNA sort of solution set now, you know, you get a lot of functionality that you used to get from these things. You get one thing that did MFA, one thing that did SSO, one thing that did biometrics. No. Now you go to a provider and you say, I want MFA, SSO, and biometrics all, you know, tied together, and I want it to do device health checks. And a lot of vendors can say, here you go. And if you do that, you have one provider instead of four, and usually you can get rid of you know, double and triple dipping on the budget.
Does the customer ask vendors for ROI? Is it helping them to make a business case?
So what's kind of showing up in the space is that the business case of cybersecurity is now becoming a pretty standard conversation, which I think is really great. The days of folks just saying they needed the next shiniest, coolest, super amazing thing in security because they say they needed it have kind of gone away. Especially with, you know, budget realignment and whatever else. So where you see now is people saying there is a business outcome from this and there is a need that will help the business, not just help security.
In your mind, when I on ZTNA and I'm roaming between different networks, should I remain connected or should I reconnect? Is it like a security versus availability?
I personally take the position of default deny. I think that that's where there's more value in that approach. You know, if you're If you're going to have somebody that's going to be popping in and out off of access points pretty regularly, if you use really good telemetry, you can kind of establish what is sort of normal-ish and be able to do it, you know, in a dynamic fashion. However, I would rather risk the one person being ticked off that I block them than allow the 100 people that say they need that access and cause compromise.
I think I don't have any more questions for the kickoff. Any questions to us?
Oh, I just really think it's great what you guys are doing. I mean, the fact that you're doing a podcast on architecture is super, because, you know, we have lots of podcasts on, you know, just security topics and general shenanigans and whatever else, but nobody's talking about architecture. So well done.
Thank you very much. And we'll share later on how people can find you on LinkedIn.
Yep. Yeah. Look me up on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'm pretty easy to find.
Please remember to subscribe to our podcast and join us for our next episode.